I'm Molly Wood, sitting in for Lizzie O'Leary, and this is Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. More than 90% of millennials say they eventually want to buy a house. That's according to the National Association of Home Builders. So how are you supposed to prepare for such a huge expense? Buy less avocado toast? I know you saw that one coming. But it turns out millennials are not really a bunch of crazy spenders, according to the data, not any more than baby boomers anyway. And the challenges of buying a home are real, sometimes due to completely external factors, like the rise in home prices, the reality of student loans, and slow wage growth. We heard from some listeners about how they're coping with the housing question.
Hi, I'm Jason Wang, and I live in New Hampshire. Basically, I don't have any interest in buying a house at this time. I'm happily renting and paying down my massive student loans. Even if I didn't have the student loans, buying seems like a bad move because it ties me to one job market, and that's not something I want to do early in my career.
Others have found novel solutions for finding a home that's at least semi-permanent.
My name is Bella Fishbane. I am 32 years old, and my partner and I live in the Bay Area. So when we were looking into our housing options in the Bay Area and what we could afford, we could only afford a small apartment or maybe a starter home. And we wanted something better. So we decided to invest quite a bit into our tiny house because we felt comfortable with the idea and we knew we wanted our dream home. And the only downside was that it would be tiny.
And Bella's home is on wheels. Regardless of what you may choose, all these options require savvy money management. So what can young grads start doing now to save money for their dream homes? We brought in Delia Fernandez, a personal financial planner with 23 years in the business. Delia, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
So it seems like, contrary to what we may have heard, millennials are getting this done, this whole house buying thing.
They really are.
Let's talk about how they're doing it. If you are a young grad, how do you prepare yourself financially to get a house?
You have to figure out where you are financially. You have to figure out what you can afford. And you have to figure out if you've got room in your budget to save. Because the biggest issue in buying a house, next to being able to afford the payments, is having the down payment. So you need to put aside some money for that purpose.
And how do you figure that out? I mean, it's you know, it sounds easy to say, but I think that's the daunting part, right?
It is the daunting part, but all of us have to learn these money skills. So I think the important thing is to look at your paycheck every month and take a look at yourself the way a lender would. How much income do you gross every month before they start taking out taxes? How much do you already commit to debt? Maybe you have student loans or a car loan. And how much do you think of your budget that you could allocate to housing?
What about if you live in New York or Los Angeles or Washington, D.C. or the Bay Area where I live, where it just feels like it's never going to happen no matter how much you save? Is there still hope?
There is still hope.
Even in these markets.
You might have to make some tough decisions and you might have to see if you're lucky enough to be able to go to the bank of mom and dad. That might be a part of your plan. Listen, we like to live where the action is, but to afford the house that's within our price range, we may have to face a commute. And that's reality in the big cities. Absolutely reality. Or we may make the trade-off and say we're going to buy a place in the city and we're going to have five roommates the rest of our life. Make the decision.
Right. So let's talk about renting, because that is also a bigger and bigger trend. Is there any kind of benefit to renting for a few years so that you can save for a home, or even just sort of staying flexible so that if your city gets unaffordable, you can scamper off to somewhere cheaper?
Well, Molly, that's exactly it. So that's an essential time in your life when you're either in the type of industry where you need to move from market to market, like, say, the media industry or the high-tech industry, or whether you just want to be flexible and take advantage of whatever might come up, because a lot of time our careers take us in different directions. So renting is okay, but remember that you're going to have enough room in your budget to have extra cash on hand to take advantage of those opportunities, first and last on the next place that you move to, for example. So don't rent and spend every dime that you make on renting and entertainment, because you're going to need some savings for that next opportunity.
I'm happy you said renting is okay, because I think that is another central question that millennials and even new grads are asking, which is, do I have to buy a house? That's been conventional wisdom for so long. There's a real sort of lifestyle conversation to be had, right?
Absolutely. Here's the key. I just want to make sure that we can accomplish everything that you want to accomplish and not have the rent get so expensive going up every year that you can't afford to live your life. So you always have to be calibrating that. But I don't think rent is inherently evil. As you know, in some of these big cities, they raise the rent every year. And you have to have an income that keeps up with that. Or you have to have room for another roommate, right, to help pay the rent. And that's a reality of renting. So I don't think renting is evil, but that means you just have to keep an eye on your budget even more closely to make sure that the landlord doesn't raise the rent too much so that you can still afford to stay where you are.
So student debt, let's talk about that, because that is obviously looming, especially for these new college grads.
Absolutely.
Is this question of how they're going to manage that debt and save for not even maybe a home, but just emergencies.
Lenders are going to be okay with you having student debt. You have to decide if it's student debt you can afford. So here's a rule of thumb. If people are still in college, let's try not to take out a total amount of loans that are more than what you'll earn the first year out of school. So if you're a liberal arts major and you think you're going to make $30,000 that first year, maybe you shouldn't take out a total amount of loans more than $30,000. If you're an engineer, maybe that's more like $60,000 or $100,000. Just depends.
I love that. That's really good.
Isn't that interesting?
And yeah, I wish I had known that.
Yeah, exactly. And make sure that you lay out. Here's the other problem I see with student loans is people graduate, but they really don't know what they owe and they don't know what the terms of the loans are. That is, they don't know what the payments are or the interest rates or how long they last.
So work itself is changing and the way that people work is changing. There's a lot more, you know, people don't have as many or lots of young people don't have regular permanent full-time jobs. They might be in a creative field. They might be part of the gig economy. They might be sort of cobbling things together. Does that have an impact or are all the rules still the same?
No, it has a huge impact. So you always have to be ready. You have to be flexible and you have to have an emergency fund on hand. You've got to have 2 to 3 months of bare expenses set aside somewhere, ultimately, in case somebody does it to you, in case they lay you off.
So Delia, on this question of gig economy workers or freelancers, people who are a little more flexible, what kind of issues does that raise? How did they prepare themselves for a potentially skeptical lender who says you don't have a guaranteed income every month?
Yeah, you don't have a guaranteed income, but you have a history. So what anyone who's self-employed is going to face is they're going to face a lender who wants documentation of your income. They're going to look back the last 2 or 3 years of tax returns. They're going to want to see your checking account to see that money is being deposited. You have to be able to show that you can steadily support yourself.
Delia Fernandez is a personal financial planner and investment advisor in Southern California. Delia, thank you so much.
I've enjoyed this.
And you can find more advice from Delia Fernandez on our website, marketplace.org.